Let's quickly recap the main points of Psukah de Zimra as we have done them until now, and then we'll launch into the final point of Psukah de Zimra. We spoke about the Ribbono Shel Olam being the only one who has the ability to create something out of nothing. He is the only Borei. That's the definition of the word Borei, is he's a creator. Human beings have the ability to adapt. God has the ability to create. We spoke about Hashem as Melech, Hashem as King, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands apart from the world, and nonetheless the world is made up of His sustenance and constant influence in the world. We spoke about as the result of point number one of Hashem as Creator, that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and creates by His word, that therefore the world holds no significance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because as He can create, He can destroy, He can create unlimited times, that there's no limit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to create, and therefore all is not before Him. And we spoke about the issue of Hashem being unchanged by creation, that He's not affected by our positive behavior or by our negative behavior. Finally, last week, we focused primarily on the last element that we discussed in Psukah de Zimra, namely the awesomeness of the soul of the Jew, and that the soul of the Jew is incomparable to anything else in creation, and that the rest of creation was created by the word of Hashem, by the 10 utterances of creation, whereas man, we are told, Yisrael alu b'machshava, that a man, the soul of the Jew, comes from the machshava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes from the thought of Hashem, and that thought is far more intimate than his speech, and therefore the machshava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the thought of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kaviyachu, which is the neshama, has great meaning to Hashem. And that the other distinction between the creation of the rest of the world and the soul of man is that the rest of the world was created by Yemer Lekim, and Hashem said, Yemer Lekim, and Hashem said, it comes to man. All of a sudden, the Torah describes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers the earth, and then He blows into man this neshama, and that there's this fascinating distinction between speech and blowing, that a person is able to speak for extended periods of time without it affecting their kaiches, whereas a person blowing will invariably become exhausted in a very short period of time, because, as the Zohar HaKadosh says, man de nofach, somebody who blows, mitoiche nofach, blows from deep within themselves, and therefore, when they blow, they are giving out their neshama, so to speak, and therefore, it comes from a much deeper place. So that the soul of man is on a whole different plane than is the rest of creation. So, here we move on to the next point in the Psukah de Zimra, the last and final point, and perhaps the most overwhelming, powerful point. Psukah de Zimra ends with the splitting of the sea. We read the portion where Hashem saves Israel. Hashem splits the sea, and Klal Yisrael sing the song at the splitting of the sea, and we repeat this Shira daily. Now, the following thought we have shared in the Sunday morning classes over the past year and a half, so I'm not going to elaborate in it a great deal, but we need to touch upon it. There are, in letter A here in section 1, there are four terms that we need to define. Yam is the sea. Yabosha is dry land. Alma de Izgalia is a language from the Zohar, which is a revealed world. Alma de Iskasia is a concealed world. The correspondence is as follows. The Yam, the sea, is an Alma de Iskasia, is a concealed world. One who stands on dry land and looks over the sea does not see the entire world that exists in the sea. the world which exists on dry land is a revealed world, that anybody who's standing sees everything which goes on in this exposed, revealed world. Most of this comes from the celebration on the seventh day of Pesach of the splitting of the sea, but we need to understand this follows. The splitting of the sea did not happen for the following reasons. It did not happen to get Israel to the other side of the sea, because Israel came out on the same side of the sea. It was shaped like a horseshoe. They went in and came out in the same spot. So the point was not, how did the chicken get across the road? It was not to get Klal Yisrael to the other side. The point also was not to wipe out the Egyptians, because as we see throughout history, the Rebbeinu Shlomo utilized much easier methods, a much more common methods of wiping out Israel's enemies than creating walls within the sea and having people go in and then drowning. There are other methods. So we need to understand what was the goal of the miracle of the splitting of the sea. In Tehillim, and in many other places, but primarily we use this pasuk by Tkiah Shofar. We say, Min hametzar karasi ka, anani bamerchav ka. Hashem, I call out to you from the constraints. I call out to you from the limitations, from my narrowness. Anani, answer me, Hashem, bamerchav, with expanse. What's the distinction between meitzar, between this narrowness and the merchav and the expanse? The distinction is narrowness, when you say about a person, they have a very narrow vision. You're talking about a person who's narrow-minded, meaning they only see things in a very limited sense. A person who sees the world only as it looks, they see a world of appearances, is a person who's living in a meitzar. They're a person who's living with a keyhole perspective on life. A person who sees the big picture, a person who's able to put place periods of time in the context of history, is a person who's broad-minded. They're a person who sees the big picture. In the sense of spirituality and physical existence, a person who sees everything on a superficial, gashmias, physical level, is a person who's living in Meitzah. They're a person who sees everything very superficially. A person who understands that the Almighty is sustaining all things, that everything really exists because of the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's bringing it into existence, is a person of Merchav, that's a person who has a broad vision, a person who has a deeper understanding of things. Mitzrayim, the very name of the land, the very name of this attitude, is Meitzarim, the Arizal says. It comes from the language of people who were so steeped in physical pleasure and in their own hedonism that their vision was completely superficial. All they saw was the Meitzar. All they saw was the narrowness of their existence and everything around them. The Almighty needs to come and take Klal Yisrael out of the Meitzar. And here's where we come to Yam and Yabosha. The vision of Yabosha, the vision of dry land, has two elements in it. Those of us who dwell on dry land see ourselves as being completely independent of our surroundings. We can swim, we could spend time in the water, we could spend time on dry land, we can go up to space. We're free, we're independent people. A fish or any elements that live in the sea proclaim by their very existence that they are. It's sea life. Their very life depends on the water in which they exist. They claim no independence from their surroundings. They carry no such facade. They show themselves as being dependent upon the water. That's the essence of sea life. But that world is a world of concealment. It's a world where it's not at all evident to the naked eye. It's something where you have to go deeper than that which is evident. Can you pass the torch? It's something where you have to dig beneath the level. A person standing on dry land looking out at the sea, and you'd say to them, do you realize that there are tens of thousands of species? To the degree where the Talmud says, for everything that exists on dry land, its equivalent exists in water. Kol ma sheyesh bayam. Kol ma sheyesh bayabasha, yesh bayam. It's equivalent. It's exactly alike. Whatever's on dry land is in the sea. But you look out at the sea from the top, all you see is flat water. You see no life. It's all concealed. The true understanding of life is like the sea. It's moment by moment dependent upon the sustenance of Hashem, but it's completely beneath the surface. You don't see it when you look out. It seems to be missing from our perception. It requires a much deeper perception. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to redeem Klal Yisrael from the life of the Meitzarim, from this narrowness of perspective, He creates a miracle. He creates a miracle for Klal Yisrael, and that miracle is Holchu Bayabosha B'Soich Hayam. For the moment, the Almighty revealed the world as it really is. He showed them Egypt's perspective on the world is completely wrong. There is nothing which exists outside of godliness. It is moment to moment dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He showed that the dry land is nothing but a mirage. It's nothing but a facade. It's all B'Soich Hayam. It's all real life is the way it is in the sea. So He took Klal Yisrael and walked them through the sea on dry land, meaning for that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu erased the distinction between dry land and sea, and Klal Yisrael saw reality for what it was. So He didn't do it to save the Jews physically. He didn't do it to drown the Egyptians physically. He did it because Klal Yisrael needed to be extracted from this superficial vision of the Meitzar, of the narrowness, and be taken into a world of spirituality, being taken into a world of reality by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the entire world is B'Soich Hayam, the entire world is really submerged in the sea. We are completely dependent upon the word of Hashem. I thought perhaps, based upon this, we understand why tahara happens by submerging oneself in water. Because every tum, every form of impurity stems from some touch of touching this independence. And in order to once again acquire tahara, whether it's a vessel or it's a person, they submerge themselves completely and totally underwater to recognize the true source of all things. Tahara, water, becomes therefore the source of purity. It becomes the source of everything pure because it shows a complete and total dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you follow letter B, the essence of Mitzrayim is Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koyle. Who is Hashem who I should listen to Him? I'm independent. I don't need God. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did in Egypt, let me just finish this section, is Nigla Aleim Melech Malchei Amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to do something. If you don't cop this, it's fine. It's a twist on the words. So for those of you who are Hebraists, Malchei, Melech Malchei Amlochem. We call HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we call Him, this is the language of the Haggadah. Nigla Aleim Melech Malchei Amlochem, okay? Malchei. The plural, right? That's melech in plural. Is what's the minimum amount of malchei? Is two. Hamlochim is two. Each of those is plural, right? Remember we discussed in the earlier classes that there are four levels of concealment. Malchus, that the concept of malchus involves HaKadosh Baruch Hu concealing Himself on four different levels in these four worlds until we come to our present world. Nigle aleihem. You know what the Almighty did in Egypt? He revealed the Melech, which is Malchei Amlochim. He revealed Himself in a way that it was above any concealment. He removed all the facades. He removed all of the forms of concealment and revealed that King, which is Melech, Malchei Amlochim, above all four levels of concealment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted for one moment at the splitting of the sea. He lifted all of the veils of creation. He lifted all the concealment and showed godliness in its purest form. Egypt fell away and Klal Yisrael were saved because it was ingrained in Klal Yisrael, it was part and parcel of who they were, and Egypt had no life. Without living a life of facade, without living a life of just physical appearance, Egypt had no life, and therefore Egypt drowned in the sea. Egypt can't live knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sustaining the world moment by moment. They drowned in the sea. Klal Yisrael thrives in the sea. We thrive knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sustains everything moment by moment. That revelation causes us to say in the Shira, Zeh Keli V'Anveihu, this is my God and I shall beautify him. And Chazal say that every little child pointed with their finger, Zeh Keli, this is my God, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted all the veils of creation and exposed godliness in its purest form to the degree where a small child saw that which is evident. And this rings of the time to come. Umala ha'aretz, deyas Hashem, what does the Pasuk say? The world will be filled of the knowledge of God. How does the Pasuk end? Kayam li'ayim achasim, like the sea covers the waters of the sea. It's the essence of the sea. It's the essence of the message of the sea. That's how every child will see godliness. As clearly as life is dependent upon the water, that's how clearly we'll see godliness in the world to come. Okay, let's go to point number two. Let's learn the Gemara together. Tanya Amar Reb Meir. Reb Meir says, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Minayin l'tchias ha-mesim min ha-Torah. We know that there is this fundamental of faith. One of the 13 principles of faith is that there will be the resurrection of the dead. So the Gemara says, where do we see this in the Torah? After all, wouldn't you say that a fundamental of faith should be brought somewhere in scriptures, in the Torah itself? So the Gemara says, Shenemar, for it is written, Oz Yashir Moshu v'nei Yisrael, part of the Shira that we say every day. Then Moshe and Bnei Yisrael will sing Es Hashira Hazois LaHashem, this song to Hashem. The Gemara comments, Shor Loi Ne'amar, it doesn't say they sang this song. It says, Ela Yashir, they will sing this song. Mikan, from here we see, L'tchias HaMesim in HaTorah, from this chapter we see that since it says Moshe and Klal Yisrael will sing, it means that in a time to come, they're going to sing. Not that they just sang it then, but they are destined to sing the song again in the time to come. The obvious question is, why here? Why did the Rabbeinu Shlalem use this place in all of Torah to share the message with us that there is going to be a resurrection of the dead? How is this somehow relevant to the splitting of the sea? Go on to page 2. And here you'll recognize this because it's the introduction to Pirkei Avos, it's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which says as follows, Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chedek li'edam haba. All of Israel has a portion in the world to come. Shenemar, v'amech kulam tzadikim, your nation are all tzadikim, lo'elam yeshu aretz, netzem ha'toyim, as yodol lispoer. The pasuk continues that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes great pride in his creations. V'elu she'en lehem chedek li'edam haba. And the following do not have a portion in the world to come. Somebody who says that the resurrection of the dead is not found in the Torah. That person has no portion in the world to come. And the obvious question here is that Olam Haba, by definition, means a world to come. Should it not say every Jew will have a portion in the world to come? Rather than every Jew yet has a portion in the world to come? Has a portion in the world to come means I have it now. I don't have it now. God willing, I will have it when I die. But what does it mean? Yesh lehem, they have a portion in the world to come. So we need to define two terms. And here's where it gets a little bit deep. So hang in here now, okay? There are two terms. One term is Olam Haba, the world to come, and another term is Tchias HaMesim, is the resurrection of the dead. So we understand Olam Haba is the place where the neshama goes when a person dies, so the neshama goes to Olam Haba. Tchias HaMesim, we understand the resurrection of the dead is a time when the soul comes back in a body. So I think it's important for us to ask the obvious question is, what is the chronology of these things? How does this happen? What comes first? What comes next? What's a better place? Is Olam Haba a better place? Is Tchias HaMesim a better place? Where do we want to be? So you're going to find this shocking, but this is a matter of controversy. The Rambam and the Ramban, namely Maimonides and Nachmanides, disagree about this. The Rambam writes that the neshamas temporarily go to Olam Haba, they go to this world to come. The Rambam, Maimonides, they exist in Olam Haba temporarily. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings them back for Tchiyas HaMesim, for the resurrection of the dead, in their bodies, and then everybody dies again and goes to Olam Haba. The souls are temporarily in Olam Haba until the time of Tchiyas HaMesim comes. At that point, they are restored to bodies for some temporary stage, and then everybody dies again and lives happily ever after in Olam Haba without their bodies. The Ramban, Nachmanides, disagrees. He says that there is a temporary stage of Olam Haba, and then the souls come back in their bodies and live happily ever after in their bodies. At Tchiyas HaMesim. Now, in this world, in this physical world, in physical bodies, that's where the story ends. Wait. Everybody patient. It's after the Tchiyas HaMesim is after the time of Mashiach. Now, here's the tricky thing. This machlokes has another component to it. And that is, where is the main reward? Is the main reward, according to the Rambam, and logically speaking, the body is a terrible impediment for a soul to be able to share this relationship with God. So it would make sense that the ultimate reward should take place in a soul with a soul that has no body, because the body is a great impediment. So the Rambam, who says that the ultimate goal is Olam Haba, a place without a body, is very logical, because the body is the source for all problems here. It is an impediment, whichever way you look at it, it is a limited body trying to relate to an infinite God, and therefore it should be a terrible impediment. Whereas according to the Ramban, according to Nachmanides, where the ultimate goal is the Olam HaTchia, is the world of the resurrection, there the goal, the greatest reward, is the soul in a body. Well, how does that stack up logically? Why would the ultimate reward take place with a body and soul? Wouldn't the body impede that relationship? So here's why not. Let's go back to session number one. Why does the body impede the soul? The body impedes the soul because the nefesh habahami blinds us into seeing things in a superficial way. In fact, the body itself is the result of this process, as we discussed, of Seyde Hishtalshlus, of this concealment after concealment after concealment, and therefore it relates to the world on its level. The neshama wants to relate to God. The body sees things in a whole different way. You have this conflict going on between body and soul. The soul wants to relate to God. The body wants to relate to steak or Chinese food, and they don't get along. Their goals are different. Now, of course, then the body is an impediment to the soul being to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the way the Ramban learns, and this, by the way, is the Ramban's view, is the accepted view in with the Chachmei HaKabbalah, his view that the ultimate goal is going to take place in the Olam HaTchia, in the resurrection of the dead, that the body and soul will be reunited to have the ultimate benefit. You know why that happens? That happens because the revelation that takes place at that time is a hisgalus, is a revelation of godliness, which is over and above any order of creation. It's completely outside of the creation experience. When is the body an impediment? When the body's relating on its level, meaning through the four levels of creation, and there is concealment of godliness. what happens in the world to come in this Olam HaTchiyah is that there's a complete revelation of godliness, and therefore the body doesn't get in the way. But we still need to understand, okay, it doesn't get in the way. The body doesn't harm it, but what value is there? What's the point? Why does the body need to be part of this, sharing this experience? Why is it important? What is the body invested in this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And here, we need to talk about mitzvahs. Because all of these lofty things are very nice, but they got to mean something to us. What does it say to us today? So, take out this Hebrew page, please. And let's learn this together. What? Fine. It's the same thing. The Ramban is the accepted opinion. There's, by the way, a fascinating thing. The Rambam, Maimonides, did not have access to Kabbalah. The Rambam, Maimonides, did not have access to Kabbalah. The Ramban, Nachmanides, had great access to Kabbalah. They did it to it purposely, to keep you on your toes. He didn't have a Rebbe in Kabbalah. Take a look at the underlined portion here. This is from the Kutei Torah Parshas Behar. The Ha'aliyah, the underlined portion. And again, I encourage you to go back and learn the whole thing because it's an outstanding piece here. I mean, it's part of a much longer piece, but it's at least this portion of it is phenomenal. He's talking about the fact that the neshama was lowered into this world, into the lowliness of the body. And the purpose of its lowering is for it to be able to be elevated. So now he's beginning, what's the elevation? Ve'aliyah, the elevation. Hu ha'hiskalus or ha'sevev kolamin is the revelation of a pure light which comes forth from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shiyeh lo'asid love that will take place in the world to come. Bizman ha'tchiyah at the time of the resurrection of the dead. And therefore, yegilu zer l'neshamos begufim daika. Therefore, this revelation takes place specifically to a neshama which is in a physical body. Why? Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Himself totally, ki lefishu hu shava umash v'kotan v'godol, because in this sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation, there is no such thing as small and big. When you're dealing with infinite terms, is infinite closer to a million or to one? It's the same thing. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu releases and shows his infinitude to the world, the body is no more distant to God than is the soul. Therefore, this revelation takes place even in the world of Asiya, this world, this very physical world. Now, what's our part in this? So look at the bold letters. I get to use all my different things on my computer. You know how we bring about this? What's our relationship to this? This comes about through our fulfillment of physical mitzvahs in this world. Skip to the next underline. What does that mean? The goal and the foundation of all mitzvahs, hu lahapoich hayesh la'ayin. The goal of it is to transform matter into nothingness. Remember, a few weeks ago we discussed the world coming into existence as a yesh me'ayin. That we look at this, and this is real, and whatever created this is an ayin, right? We say that Hashem created a world yesh me'ayin. He created something out of nothing. What we do in the fulfillment of mitzvahs is we take cardboard and paper, we take food and drink. We take leather and wool and we turn it back into nothingness. The Almighty created a world, something out of nothing, and we take that something and show by our utilizing physical matter for the purpose of godliness, we're saying that we recognize that left unto itself without God, it's nothing. By utilizing it, by proclaiming God's mastery over creation, over all physical things, we are returning creation back to its source. In fact, this, the direction of our service is the exact opposite of creation. Creation was Hashem creating something out of nothing, and we create nothing out of something. We flip creation back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at the words inside. We take that which the world sees as being something, and by recognizing God's dominion and the Almighty's bringing that into existence, by proclaiming God master over all things, we are saying that in essence, left to itself, it is nothing. I'm giving it back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm turning the world back over. So the Almighty created concealment, and we're creating revelation. He tried hiding himself, and we're revealing him. We're taking all physical things which proclaim their independence from Hashem, and by utilizing them for a mitzvah, we're saying, this isn't at all removed from Hashem. It's very clearly godliness. Today's Yud Tes Kislev. The Magid's Yotza, it's the day that the Baal Tanya got out of prison. They tell one of the most magnificent stories about their Baruch Hol of Mezhbish. It was yesterday. That you've heard the story before, that Rabbi Baruch Hu was out one day walking with his Talmidim and he saw a child crying. So he called him over and said, why are you crying? So he said, I was playing hide and seek with my friends and I hid in a great place and nobody could find me. So Rabbi Baruch Hu said, that's great. You won the game. Why are you crying? He said, Rebbe, you don't understand. They stopped looking for me. They gave up. Then Rabbi Baruch Hu began to weep. So his Talmidim said, Rebbe, why are you crying? So he said, the Almighty is playing the same game with us. He concealed himself in creation and wants us to go looking for him. And we've given up. We've stopped looking for him. The essence of the performance of a mitzvah is taking matter which claims to be independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and proclaiming Hashem Master. Taking that which is a yesh, that which presents itself as being something, and recognizing that unto itself it is nothing. Without HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's nothing. So in essence, if you think about it, every time we perform a mitzvah, every time we say a bracha over something, here is a big plate of food for dinner, and it's claiming its independence, it presents itself as being Chinese. And along comes the Jew, and says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Mehiyah B'dvarei. Everything comes into existence by the word of Hashem. Says, oh, it's Chinese. It's not. You just proclaimed the Almighty Master over this. What did we do? We brought about a revelation in a place where there was a concealment. We have revealed, we blew the cover of God's concealment. We went looking for the hiding child and proclaimed Hashem's mastery over his world. We've brought the revelation of Tchiyas HaMesim into the world. Not this isn't something that happens in a vacuum. It is we who bring about that portion of the world to come. And therefore, when the Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chedek Le'olam Haba, it's not a promise that every Jew will have a portion in the world to come. No, nothing doing. It's saying to us, Kindalach. Every person was allotted a given amount of physicality with which they will interact in their lives. Each one of us. For some people, it's in monetary sums. For some people, it's in food. For some people, it's in mitzvahs. For all of us, it's many different things. Each of us is given a certain amount. It might be 1,000,000 pounds of something throughout our life. Each one of us is given our chelek. Le'olam haba, we are given the portion which we are to turn into Olam Haba. We are given now a portion of concealment that we have to reveal. Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek li'olam haba. Every person has a portion li'olam haba, which is our responsibility to reveal the godliness upon it. It's our mission. That's why we were placed in this world, to reveal the godliness in this area. Now, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek li'olam haba. And it's bound with the concept of Tchiyas HaMesim, because otherwise we could get away with just the spiritual stuff. If all Tchiyas HaMesim is about, if all the world to come is about the spirit, all it is about the godly soul, it's not about our bodies, then we could live in Olam Haba, we could live in a world of souls. But we come back with our bodies, because it's our body that interacts with the physical world. It's our body which we perfect every time we interact with a mitzvah, with our hands, with our legs, with going to a mitzvah, with moving our heart in tefillah, with using our brains to comprehend Torah. We perfect the entire gestalt of our body so that that body becomes part of the plan. It's the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the physical world that we're driving for. That's Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek li'olam haba. And therefore, Chazal tell us, Schar mitzvah mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. Meaning, every time we interact with the physical world and create this revelation of godliness in the world, that's the reward. That's our portion in the world to come. In the world to come, we go on to enjoy that revelation that we brought into existence. That's the mitzvah itself, right there. We can't see it. One of the Svarim compares it, he says, very interesting. He says, if somebody were to come over to you and say to you, I want you to know that I've placed $1 million in a savings account for you. You cannot access it for the next 20 years. Can't touch it. Can't go to the bank and verify it. I hand you a bank book. It's $1 million, it's yours. You can't touch it for another 20 years. Would we not be overjoyed? What's the point? You can't see it. You can't feel it. You don't hear the jingle. You don't see the dollars. But it's mine. It's got my name on it. This Hizgalus, this revelation, has our name stamped all over it. This is the revelation of godliness that we brought into the world. Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. Each one of us has our portion in this world to come. If we believe that every time we interact with the physical world through a mitzvah, that we've acquired somehow this revelation in our name, well, let's say we fulfilled our obligation today. Yeah, there's a mitzvah to do A, B, and C. I did it once today already. I've done my portion. And you look at the person and say, do you realize what you're missing out on? Do you realize what you're giving up? Do you have a sense of how much more revelation you could bring into the world today? Why would you settle for a nominal amount of revelation or the obligatory amount if you could have so much more? I mean, this perspective is a life-altering, this Tchiyas HaMesim perspective, this fundamental faith in the resurrection has numerous ramifications. It's never enough. Right. Yesh le mona reitza masayim. Chazal say, you have 100, you want 200. Look at letter D on page 2. I didn't check up on the source of this, but it's a Gemara. The Gemara says, G'doy lemaise tzadikim yoisem ebriya shamayim va'aretz. The deeds of the righteous are greater than creation of heaven and earth. Because the creation of heaven and earth conceals God. And the actions of the tzaddikim do the exact opposite. They reveal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So G'day L'maisa Tzaddikim, the actions of the righteous are greater than Shemayim V'aretz, because the creation of Shemayim V'aretz was creation of Yesh Me'ayin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created concealment, from revelation. And the deeds of the tzaddikim create revelation out of concealment. It's the exact opposite movement. Let me pause. Let's go back to the Shira. Look at section number 3. Look at now how these words read. And I didn't translate them into English because I knew that some of you would read the English, and the English translation of this is not going to work with this. Vayosha Hashem bayom hahu es Yisrael miyad Mitzrayim. And Hashem saved on that day Israel from the confinement, from the narrow vision of the Egyptian culture. Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim, and Klal Yisrael saw Egypt, meis al sfas hayom. They were dead because they lived on the banks of the river. They could never step foot into the water. They did not have the vision of the yam. They did not have the vision of the sea. They remained dead on the banks of the river. The reason they died, the reason Klal Yisrael came at that moment to understand the distinction between them and the Egyptian culture, was because Klal Yisrael understood the meaning of water, the meaning of the sea, whereas Mitzrayim was meis al sfas hayam. Egypt was dead on the banks of the river. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael by that revelation at that moment, which was that moment, which was the the preview of the revelation that will take place in the time to come. Oz Yashir Moshe, the Gemara says, Mikan Shetchias HaMeis Min HaTorah. You know why we see the fundamental element of faith of the resurrection of the dead? Where do we see it in the Torah? We see it at the moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself at the splitting of the sea. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted all the facades of nature, he showed that he controls everything. It was at that moment that Klal Yisrael said, you know what? There's going to be a time to come, just like it was then. I'm going to be in a physical body, and I'm going to behold the wonder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was a preview at that moment, that type of revelation, that gave them the vision of understanding the distinction between the sea and dry land, between the world of facade, the world of veneer, and a world of reality. It was at that moment that they foresaw the world of the Tchia, the world of when they would come back into a body. And therefore the Pasuk says, let us see here, a Pasuk in Yeshaya, V'ro kol bosa yachtav kipi Hashem diber. Every being of flesh will see that everything which is in existence is nothing more than Kipi Hashem Dibre. It's nothing more than the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's going to be revealed at that moment that the entire world and everything which exists is nothing more than an utterance of creation. Kipi Hashem Dibre, that's all everything is. And what are we called as a people? We're called Ivrim. And the Gemara says, why are we called Ivrim? Because we are Ivreyam, we are people who pass through the sea. It's not talking about the miracle then of us passing through the sea. We are Ivrim because we are perspective in life as a people who has passed through the sea. We understand the perspective of the Yam. Yes, it's a concealed world, but it's a world which is completely and totally dependent upon the word of Hashem. Up until now, we spoke about the power of the Jewish soul, the difference of the Jewish soul. Look at this language from the Balatanya in Perek Memtes. We say it in Kiddush, we say it on Yontif, and we say it every day in Davening. Uvanu v'charta mikol am v'losho. And you chose us from among every nation and language. And he draws the following thing. Choosing, by definition, means you're choosing among similar things. If somebody walks out one day and says, you know, I'm really hungry, I'm in the mood of something to eat, and there's an elephant and an apple, one does not have to choose. doesn't involve choice. Choice involves something which is similar. Therefore, when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us from among the nations, it can't be talking about on a soul level, because as we discussed last week, you cannot compare the neshama of the Jew to any other creation. And therefore, that choice cannot be talking about souls. So when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us, what he's saying is HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the Jewish body. Haguf HaChumri, the physical body, HaNidme B'Chumri Yusai, who is similar in its physicality, L'Gufei Umas HaOlam, to the bodies of the nations of the world. And that body, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose. In what way did he choose it? He chose it because it is destined to become the ultimate sheath which will hold the neshama in the resurrection of the dead. And therefore, it is a fundamental of faith and not just some neat thing, because this becomes the driving force that says to every Jew, we need to spend the focus of our lives interacting with the physical world in a way which is responsible to Torah, because every time a Jew goes off into business and conducts his life in such a way which is consistent with God's will, they have taken that entire interaction and everything they've touched along the way and revealed the godliness in such a way that they bring about that revelation into the world as a reality. So the way we treat other people, the way we interact with all physical things so that it is consistent with the will of Hashem, brings about a revelation of godliness into the world which is unparalleled and ushers in this time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Based upon this, I think that we've now laid the groundwork for something which has been staggering for many, many years. Namely, Yisgadal v'Yisgadash Shemei Rabbah. Anybody who's ever looked at the translation of Kaddish will see that it has absolutely nothing to do with death. Why is it said after a person dies? What's the relationship? But based upon what we're discussing now, death is the precursor for Tchiyas HaMeisim. It is death which enables a neshama to go to Olam Haba and then to return in this world in a physical body. So when we say Yisgadal v'Yisgadash Shemei Rabbah, what the child is doing, the child is making a statement, namely, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm dedicating my life to the glorification and the hallowing of your name in this world. I'm trying to bring about your kingdom, a revelation of your kingdom in this physical world. Because I recognize that every time I interact with this world in a mitzvah, every word of prayer, every word of Torah, every interaction with the physical world brings into the existence this revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world in such a way that it will usher in the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek li'olam haba. I recognize that there's a huge portion of godliness which I have to reveal in this world. And therefore, specifically when a person loses someone, they say Yisgadal v'Yisgadash Shemei Rabbah, saying, I am dedicating my life to this perspective of glorifying and sanctifying and bringing into existence this light of godliness in the world, which will usher in ultimately the huge revelation which exists in the time to come of Tchiyas HaMeisim. So immediately following the Shira, we say, Yishtabach Shimcha La'ad Malkeinu, may your name, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, become increased in the world. That's the essence of the Jew. The essence of the Jew is to bring into the world a sanctification and a huge suffusion of the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which will usher in, ultimately, that revelation which exists in Tchiyas HaMeisim.